minimum wage.
Welcome back to Techonomics. I'm the host, Jason Middleton. Coming up later this hour, we have a revealing interview about Russian disinformation campaigns, past and present.
The Russians were very successful in their information operation and cyber campaign that included spreading conspiracy theories and fake news. In Ukraine, there were constant conspiracy theories during the Crimea crisis.
That's Vera Zakham, research scientist who studies European stability, media, and information influence at the Institute for Public Research. But first, we continue our extended conversation with the founder of News Disseminator, News Curator, and News Funnier, FARC.com. Drew Curtis started FARC 18 years ago, and since then he's added an MBA from Cal Berkeley. He's battled with Google and got them to write a reimbursement check. And he's researching a new book on imminent technology. Oh, and then this.
Because I hate spare time, I ran for governor of Kentucky in 2015.
Oh, and how'd that work out?
I came in third.
Here's part two of our chat with Drew Curtis. We pick up the tape with talk about his new book coming out later this year.
Researching for this book, I was surprised to discover that, you know, we've all heard of peak oil. There's also peak iron. We're going to run out in about 50 years.
I didn't know that.
The good news is it's everywhere. I mean, that stuff is all over the place. The moon's covered with it. There's actually one asteroid in the asteroid belt called 16 Psyche, spelled like the 1980s riff we all used to yell at each other, for those of us that were alive. That's a good one to look up because it's a really weird object. They think it's a frozen planetary core. It doesn't look like any other object we've got because it is 90% solid iron and it is 280 kilometers across.
Wow.
That's enough iron to where if you could sell it at the current spot market, it would actually be worth something like 1,000 times more than the GDP of the planet.
Right.
Which means the price is coming down.
Right, yeah. You flood the market, we'd have to bring it down a little bit. But it's still money.
And that's enough iron to do anything.
Right.
It's way out there. Bringing it back would be pretty hard. But the upshot is that it's solvable. And there's water on it, too. So you could totally live there.
You know, extraterrestrial miners have saved the world plenty of times in Hollywood.
Yeah, I know. All the time, actually. Yeah, usually with guns on space shuttles for some reason. I don't know. I guess they never use them normally.
They weaponize once they get into orbit, I guess.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, yeah. That makes more sense. Exactly. But it's more like, you know, talking about these things as if, you know, they are going to happen. And this is less of an issue in the Bay Area, but in Kentucky in particular. Because I hate spare time, I ran for governor of Kentucky in 2015.
Oh, and how'd that work out?
I came in third.
Okay.
It was pretty good.
All right,
good spending no money, I got 35,000 votes somehow. And,
sweet.
You know, I didn't talk to that many people, so worked out. But I would bring this up, and they would be like, you know, oh, well, this stuff is a long ways off. And so my point is kind of like, yeah, but we could spend a little time right now and save ourselves a world of hurt.
Hence the book.
Yeah, so that's sort of the idea is basically to try to say, you know, look, we know more or less how this is going to play out.
You're looking it down the tunnel and you're seeing six lights coming at us and they're all trains.
Right.
And they're going to wreck the labor market.
Yep.
And something that comes up on this show and in conversations at dinner parties around here, too, is universal living wages.
Yeah, so that's coming up all the freaking time.
I have a lot of capitalists on this show, as you can imagine, a lot of founders.
It's a capitalist idea.
I think it is, too.
Yeah.
But it's hard to sell to people who may not either understand founding a company and moving it forward. Or the marketplace dynamics that you need to have an audience to sell something.
Yeah, so in my opinion, there's sort of two answers to that. But one of them is that I don't think they necessarily have to buy into it because at some point, if one of these worst case scenarios does occur, it is the only option. From that standpoint, go ahead and work out your plan. You don't really need to convince anybody. They'll be a lot more convinced when unemployment hits 25% and there's pitchforks and torches in the street. And so that's one of the ways to do it. You can catch them up later. The other one is that I've discovered when talking about these concepts, UBI actually is fantastic because people have already made decisions on it. Like some people are ultimately convinced that this absolutely works. And some people are ultimately convinced that this absolutely will not work.
Yes.
And that's when you've gone from policy to politics. And so that makes people's brains go weird. But I've had some luck with, I have a very conservative father-in-law. When I told him this, he'd never heard of it. And I got about 5 minutes down the road on it. And then he's like, oh God, this is socialism. And I'm like, I explained to him why it wasn't. But I said was like, hold on, let's back up a second. Let's say, this is just the hypothetical, let's say that instead of giving everybody a welfare check and a health care check and a whatever check, you could get one check, and then with that, you could remove the welfare state. And he's like, oh, okay. And this actually was one of the original ideas, because the idea, it was Thomas More was the first one that said anything like it, but it wasn't like it was an uncommon idea. Like Thomas Paine also mentioned it. But then the guy who did the most work on it actually was Milton Friedman, the economic patron saint of libertarians.
Right.
And it actually almost passed Congress in 1971.
Wow.
It got by one of the houses of government. It failed in the other one, but Nixon was going to sign it.
Yeah.
So it almost happened. But that said, I have been looking into it because of this, and I'm actually leaning a little negative on it at this point.
Can you explain that, please?
Yeah. So I think the problem is basically it's the libertarian blind spot, which is basically, and this is possibly fixable, by the way. This is sort of where I'm going with this, is that the libertarian blind spot is that the free market functions perfectly if you just leave it alone, and it doesn't. It gets out of hand.
Right.
And the problem with economics is that pricing isn't necessarily based on anything. We all have sort of an idea of what
sure.
things ought to cost.
No, there's a whole school of thought about how to price.
Yeah, well, and there's ways to trick you, too. Like, there's number permanence. So, for example, like, there's a famous study where, my version of this is wrong, by the way, but it's the only one I remember. But basically, because the particulars are different, but
we don't do fake news, Drew, but go ahead.
Well, you know, I do, so it's okay. But basically, they found that if you asked a college student how much a bottle of wine costs, because you know, any random bottle of wine, they'll say like $20. But what they found out was, is if you ask a college student what the last four digits of your social are, mm-hmm. and then you ask them what a bottle of wine costs, if your social last four digits are 1,000 or less, you're going to say $10. And if it's 8,000 or more, you're going to say 40.
That's fascinating.
Because we have number permanence in our head. And so I think, now I haven't found any, I don't know this for sure, but this is why I think we see so many nines at gas stations.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because your head is full of nines and you walk in and Coke is $3 for a 12-ounce bottle and you're like, that seems okay.
Yes.
Because right. your brain's full of big numbers. Right. So of course it's cost more. There's inefficiencies all over. And there's one in particular that bothers me, which is basically rents. So, for example, San Francisco, rents are really ridiculous.
Yes, they are.
I went to business school at Berkeley in 2011 and 2012, again, because I hate spare time. Of the 70 people in my class, I simultaneously had the largest house or apartment of anyone and the lowest mortgage or rent.
How did you pull that off?
I live in Kentucky. It's really cheap out there.
Right.
But the reason why it's expensive is you would think it's a supply and demand problem, and it kind of is, right? I mean, there's just not enough houses.
Yeah, there's no inventory here.
Yeah, you would think if there were a lot more houses, there would be a lot cheaper rents, right? Okay, well, but who controls that? Now, think about how this is set up. So the demand side is everybody who lives here.
Mm-hmm.
Supply side is landlords. Mm-hmm. They don't build anything.
Right.
And so you got in a situation where, and also not only did they not build anything, if they did, it would lower their own rents.
Right. Or they only build luxury, and that's what's happening in San Francisco.
Exactly. So either way, you're kind of hosed. And so you've got this imperfect market scenario that impacts everybody that isn't functioning as it ought to. Like, what ought to happen is if rents are $5,000 a month for a 500-square-foot apartment, there should be, like, 100 high-rises going up, but there's not.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because it isn't that beneficial to the people to build them. But it's also hard.
Yeah.
So you have situations like that where my concern would be where over time, might it be the case that if we did universal living wage, that eventually the pricing would eat it all up?
Right.
So I saw, here's a different example of this. So I, for complete coincidentally, I bought two cars right when Cash for Clunkers came out, one before and one after.
Okay.
So before I go into the Nissan dealership, I bought a 370Z, and I got the reason why was because we were buying a minivan was the other one, and I didn't
want to balance
minivan. Yeah, I was
out,
like, come on, man, give me something here. You know, I mean, yeah, I'm a middle-aged guy, but come on. So I go in to get the Nissan, and it's, you know, before Cash for Clunkers, I'm the only guy in there. There's a bunch of salespeople standing around, tumbleweeds rolling through the dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in there and I lowballed the hell out of them. I got exactly what I wanted. No problem. They didn't push back. They said, here, take it. And then I went back a few weeks later. Cash for Clunkers is on. I'm in a Toyota dealership this time. It's packed. I had to wait an hour just to get a sales guy. There's nowhere to sit. They're selling through their inventory like crazy. And luckily, you know, minivans are pretty ubiquitous, so I just got a minivan. And when it came time to negotiate it, they would move. And not only would they not move, but when I asked them for that discount of, like, I think it was like $4,000 I was supposed to get, they said, no, we're keeping that.
Oh, hi.
And they said, or you can just leave. And I was like, what? And they said, yeah, that's how this works. It's like, you know, I thought that's my money. They're like, no, it's ours. And so that's the universal living wage problem right there is what if the equivalent of that down the road, you know, yes. like maybe not making that specific of a break, but you know, over the course of time, if pricing eats into that, we're in a situation where now we have no social safety net and we're spending a ton of money on right. something that's getting us nothing.
Right.
So that would be my big concern. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it.
That was Drew Curtis, founder of FARC.com and slayer of idle time. Drew's working on a book that will help people outside the Silicon Valley bubble deal with the imminent issues that are coming right at us, things like robotic labor and the dearth of natural resources. In the next segment, we're splitting our efforts. We will finish our chat with Drew because talking about a universal living wage is a talk worth having. That's basically where everyone gets a basic monthly income that stabilizes the economy and removes the welfare state. Maybe. We don't know. It's still a hot button issue. Then we have another hot button issue, fake news. Russia, and disinformation. A researcher tells us Russia has been doing this for decades. Only now it's more focused on established democracies rather than upstart former colonies.
In Russian, the word is dezinformatsiya. And because Russians have been doing this for a very long time.
Right. Both of those coming up next on Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back.